This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The end of the school year is just around the corner, but the talk about education never takes a break. And even as classroom teachers prepare to wind down for the summer, there are lots of things brewing here and around the state when it comes to the topic of schools. New charter schools are scheduled to come online in the fall. The state Supreme Court is looking into the constitutionality of school vouchers. Their decision could have a very big impact. Teacher pay, recruitment, retention are also ongoing points of concern. The state just completed its first year of grading schools A through F. The grading system was supposed to get harder in the coming year, but the legislature may be putting the brakes on that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Just a few of the things we'll be talking about this hour with a panel of reporters whose beat is education. Lisa Wharf covers schools for WFAE News. Good morning and welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks.
Andrew Dunn is the education reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
And Rima Kreis joins us for the first time. Yay, Rima. She's the education reporter for WUNC. That's public radio in the Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill area. She joins us by phone. Good morning and welcome.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Let's start with the kind of school that former Charlotte Mecklenburg Superintendent of Schools Heath Morrison said many times on this program that he really liked: charter schools. Now, I don't know if he was being disingenuous there, but Ann Clark, our new superintendent, pointed out in her recent budget that budget includes an estimated $8 million in additional money that the district will have to send to charter schools, which is likely to hurt the district's chances of getting money for new programs that they would like to launch. Where do most of the state school superintendents come down on the topic of charter schools? Do they like them? Are they in favor of them, or do they resent them?
I think a lot of them would say very diplomatically that I am in favor of good charter schools.
Why?
Anything that is a good charter school. Because, I mean, they're in favor of a good education, right? And so I think that there's a sense that, when they say that, there are some charter schools that are not so good. But at the same time, you will hear many superintendents say, look, this is the effect of having so many charter schools on our system that we're going to have to pass through an extra $8 million to pay for that.
But isn't the mere existence of charter schools a condemnation of public education, traditional public education? It's a way of saying, you're no good. Or am I reading things into it?
I don't know if I would go that far. They are definitely a way to give parents more choice. And they were originally intended to be kind of an alternative to the traditional public school system. They're supposed to be more innovative, try new things out. And today you're actually seeing CMS borrow some ideas from charter schools. For example, some of the advanced manufacturing entrepreneurship themes in CMS schools are directly borrowed from some things that charter schools are doing.
And Rima, I think you've reported that some districts around the state want to run their own charter schools.
Yeah, exactly. I think the ultimate mission of charter schools was to sort of create these new innovative schools where ideally traditional public school leaders could take sort of the best things that they see in the charter schools and model it and put it in their schools. And so what we're seeing now, we don't actually see any legislation about it yet, but we've heard a lot of superintendents and school leaders say they want the ability to authorize their own charter schools to have some more of the same flexibilities that we see in charter schools, so maybe around school calendars or around curriculums. And so that would give them the ability to do that, so they're not necessarily competing for students
with
the charter schools.
If charter schools are a good idea, and there are many people in the legislature who think they are and want more charter schools, and we're going to talk about that, if it's a good idea and charter schools have more flexibility, and some of these districts around the state would like to run their own charter schools so that they can incorporate some of the best ideas that have come out of charter schools and also loosen up some of the restrictions that they face, why not just loosen up the restrictions on the public schools, period, and make them like charter schools 100%?
Well, there's some things that you wouldn't want to loosen up for the traditional public schools. One is the transportation requirements. Charter schools do not have to provide busing. Another is school lunches. That's another thing that charter schools don't have to do, but I don't think anybody would want to cut that from traditional public school districts.
But there has been movement to change calendar days. I mean, there's a bill right now that would look at hours instead of the requirement of days. But you do have a lot of superintendents saying, give us more flexibility.
18 new charter schools are scheduled to open around the state very soon. Half of them, I understand, are planned for Mecklenburg County and the surrounding counties here. How would you describe the track record of charter schools here and around the state? Are they fundamentally good? How would you, if we put them on the same A through F grading?
They are on the same A through F grading scale.
Where do they come in?
And what you see is that, the traditional public schools got a lot of B's and C's. And how the scale is calculated, this is a new thing this year, is that each school gets an A through F grade. And most of that is based on student test scores. And then about 20% of it is based on growth in test scores, which is an important measure because, you want to look at how your students are improving, not just where they end up at. But traditional public schools got a lot of B's and C's. Charter schools got more A's than traditional public schools, but they also got more F's too.
Hmm. Do we understand why? Sure, Rima, go ahead.
Helen Ladd, who is a professor of at Duke University, and some of her colleagues just came out with a study that got a lot of attention for different reasons. But one finding that she noted was that charter schools, when they first came up in the late 1990s, weren't doing so well. The students weren't performing so well. But lately, especially in the sort of around the mid-2000s, they've made a lot of test gains that are comparable to traditional public schools and are sort of even outpacing traditional public schools in terms of, I believe it was math, but sort of at par. No, they're at par with math, but ahead at reading. So there have been some studies recently that's looking at that exact issue. And as Lisa mentioned, there is the A through F grading system that we're using.
Do we understand why they got more A's and more F's than the public schools?
Well, I think there's probably part of that reason is that there's a wide variety of the quality of these schools. A through F is kind of an imperfect measure because then, again, it's primarily based on test scores. But yes, there is a wide variety of the quality of charters.
Of the 18... Go ahead, Rima. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and Ladd also mentioned that demographics probably have a role to play into this. We're seeing more schools that, according to her, that have become, she used the word, I think, segregated. So we're seeing more schools that are serving primarily white students, more schools that are serving primarily African Americans. And so I think that definitely plays a factor into it. And we're also just seeing an increase in the number of highly affluent folks going into charter schools and white people, too.
So is it the highly affluent population of these schools that's giving them the A's, and where lower-income students are gravitating towards some of these schools, is that getting F? Is there a correlation?
Well, across the...
Or is it simply the quality of the school?
Across the board, I mean, they're the A through F grading scale, and that's one of the criticisms of it, is that it largely falls along income lines.
Yes, the public school grading does. And the same is true of the charter school.
I'm sure that's an explanation for the charter schools as well.
Okay. Of the 18 charter schools on the list to open soon, are 9 schools run by for-profit companies. Half the new charters will be run by for-profit companies. What is the thinking behind this?
Well, if you talk to one of these for-profit charter management organizations, basically they see themselves as essentially consultants and a services company, just like you might hire out for custodial work or hire out any other service. You're going to hire somebody to, train the teachers and to institute a curriculum. And essentially, if you look at the numbers, there's not a whole lot of difference when you just look at it between, a nonprofit running a charter school and a for-profit, except, there is some measure of profit. Taxpayer money is being used to fund someone's profit margin, and some people just aren't comfortable with that.
Well, I was going to ask about that. I mean, why are legislators comfortable with the fact that they're giving taxpayer dollars, they're taking away money from the public schools and giving them to for-profit companies who are in the business for profit?
Well, and I have to say, as far as setting up a charter school, that is really hard, especially if you're independent, and getting those funds to bring that school alive at the beginning of the school year is difficult because you don't have much of a budget. And one of the things that I've heard from the Charter Advisory Group, which is the group that vets these applications and makes recommendations, their board chair was saying, hey, one of the things is that for-profit charter schools have this big financial backing because they're, part of a larger company to do this. So when you look at the number of charter schools, you know, even around here last year, the handful that closed, a lot of it, not all of it, but some of that had to do with financial reasons.
Yeah. No, that's an excellent point. I mean, a lot of other states, including Michigan for one, they actually will give grants to new charter schools that are just getting started up. And North Carolina doesn't do that. And I talked to some charter school organizers, and they say it can be $1 million, $1.5 million to get started. And if you don't have a company backing you, you know, it can be hard.
So if you're not a private school charging $50,000 or $60,000 a year for tuition, how do you make money?
Well, I think in a lot of cases, that's still yet to be seen. I mean, basically, charter schools get funded very similarly to how traditional public schools get funded. They get a certain per student allotment. One of the big differences is they don't get money yet. There are some bills that would change this. They don't get money for school construction. But essentially, it's the same business model as most regular schools.
There's a for-profit charter school in Charlotte run by a company called Accelerated Learning Solutions. They manage a school for students who are at risk of dropping out. How are they performing? Do we know?
Well, we don't really have a good read on a lot of the new charter schools. You know, the A through F grading scale only goes into effect after you've had a year to actually take the end of grade test, the standardized test at the end of the year. So a lot of these new ones, it's really hard to say.
And Andrew, you wrote in March about Senate Bill 456 that would direct the State Board of Education to come up with a new process and set of rules for charter schools run by for-profit or nonprofit management companies. And that would make it easier for national chains who run these schools to come into North Carolina and do the same thing here. What's the thinking behind that bill, and where does it stand?
Well, the thinking is that if you have a good model, if you have a good school, then you want more of those schools in our state, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, I can definitely see that. I can't recall exactly where that bill is as it winds through the legislature, but you know, the backers essentially just want more of the high-quality charter schools and make it easier for them.
Rima, proponents of charter schools, and I think Andrew said this a few minutes ago, said that they provide more options for families and for students. Critics say that they continue a trend of resegregating the state's public schools. Where does the truth lie?
It's a big question. You know, as I think Lisa and Andrew mentioned, there is just such a variety of charter schools all across the state, and that is sort of why charter schools came about, right? Some of them target specific types of students, some cater to at-risk students, others reach out to gifted children. So it's hard to answer that question, but like I mentioned earlier, based on some of the studies we are seeing, that students are sort of going off into different schools based on demographics. But I don't think some charter school supporters see that as necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think they're in support of anything that will produce good outcomes for students. Mm.
And it's not like the traditional public school districts have exemplary records with that either. I mean, if there's plenty of examples here in Charlotte of schools that are, you know, highly concentrated in one race or another.
You want to chime in there as well? Okay. Opponents also say that charter schools give operators an unfair advantage over public schools because although they get tax dollars, there are all these exemptions that we talk about. Can we really compare apples to apples here in terms of performance when there are hoops that charter schools don't have to jump through in 15 seconds or less?
Well, I think you have to compare apples to apples. I mean, that's how the system is set up.
But how do you do that? Because they don't have to provide school lunch. They don't have to take everybody.
And that's one of the big criticisms about, you know, as far as schools catering to low-income students.
We have to take a break. We're coming back with more. We'll talk about vouchers as well in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm of Womble Carlyle, 550 attorneys, 14 offices, 7 states, and Washington, D.C. One focus, our clients. More information at WCSR.com. And Hearing Solutions Center, offering smart digital hearing aids that respond automatically to changes in the listener's environment. Located in Cotswold, info at 704-912-4622 or hearcharlotte.com. Solar energy has gone from a pipe dream to a boom industry in North Carolina. Did you know that we put more solar online last year than every other state in the union except for California? That growth came despite major restrictions that the legislature is now looking into removing. If they did it, It would change the way solar companies make their money. And we'll talk about that and more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Saudi Arabia's new king pulls out of a Washington summit over U.S. negotiations with Iran. Secretary Kerry meets with Russian President Putin about the Syria conflict, America's shifting relationships, and its role in the world.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about education today with three people who follow it very closely. Lisa Wharf, our education reporter here at WFAE, Andrew Dunn, the education reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and Rima Kreis, education reporter for WUNC, which serves the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area. What North Carolina education issues concern you the most? We'd like to hear from you on that topic. You can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE, or you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. You reported, Lisa, in February that state government paid about $4 million in private school tuition this year. That's taxpayer money. That was part of the Opportunity Scholarship Program. That's a voucher program, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How long has this program been in place?
This was the first year that came about, and it was kind of in limbo right from the get-go and is still in limbo. So there are a couple thousand students currently on vouchers, and they're low-income students for the most part. Now it's right before the state Supreme Court, whether it fits the state constitution or not.
What kinds of schools are these vouchers being used by students to go to?
These are all
odd construction of that sentence, but nonetheless.
Sure, I understand what you're talking about. So they're all private schools, and it's a range of private schools. One of the big private schools is, I think, up in Greensboro, the Islamic Academy here, up there. But, you know, just a whole variety from Christian schools to secular private schools that these vouchers are used for. And now they're, you know, a lot of schools, they don't necessarily cover the full tuition, but it's about $4,200 that it does cover.
Okay.
And there was some movement to basically quadruple those funds so that basically anyone who wanted a voucher could use them. But the state legislature has basically said at this point we really need to hear from the state Supreme Court before we make any action on that. But there's a lot of support for that legislature.
I want to come back to that in just a couple of seconds. A lower court, as you say, it's been in the court since almost the very beginning, and a lower court agreed with the plaintiffs in a case challenging the program, saying that the money for those vouchers siphoned money from the public schools in favor of private schools. And appeals began immediately. The state Supreme Court has now heard arguments in two challenges to that voucher program. And it surrounds the constitutionality of these things. What do experts believe the outcome might be? What do lawyers say about that? What do constitutional experts say about all of this?
Well, so, you know, federal constitution-wise, I mean, these vouchers are pretty pretty much sanctioned. And this is kind of a state constitution matter. And I'm not sure how they'll end up, but it all comes down to providing children in the state with a sound basic education. And
isn't that the function of the public schools?
It is the function of the public schools, but I mean
So what is driving both the need for vouchers or the desire for vouchers, and the desire for more charter schools?
I think the desire for vouchers is definitely in line with the desire for charter schools, and the hope is that they want to create another option for students, especially who are from low-income areas, who supporters say don't have enough opportunities or enough choices.
Is that really true? Is it really for students who from low-income areas who don't have enough choices and don't have enough money to take advantage of those choices, or is it getting the white kids out of the public schools?
There are several.
In terms of these vouchers, in terms of these vouchers, you have to be qualified for free or reduced lunch, or you have these certain qualifications so that it would only target students who are low income. Were you going to jump in, Lisa?
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So it would just target those who are low income. But yeah, like I said, the idea is to give them more opportunity, and they opened up the application for 2,400 students, and I believe from the last thing that I noted, they filled 1,200 spots, and next year, I don't know if it'll happen, depending on the Supreme Court decision, they would want to quadruple it, like Lisa said, and they would want to serve up to 8,000 to 9,000 students, so that would be significantly a lot more.
There is a school of thought out there that I'm going to talk about, and that is that there are people in politics today who want to destroy the public schools. Period. They want them gone. Is that at the root of this?
I have not heard any state lawmaker say that.
You'll never hear them say that.
I mean, and I think that wherever you are on the spectrum, is you want kids to get a good education. And, you know, obviously there's a side of the political spectrum that says, and, you know, charter schools and vouchers, charter schools especially, that's across the political spectrum. You will have a lot of, Democrats pushing for charter schools too. It's you also have a lot of people saying, hey, by doing this,
if the desire is to give a child the best possible education, and you're in the legislature and you want to increase funding for these vouchers from what they are now, what did we say they were, $4 million to $40 million, which I think is the figure that I read yesterday, what would happen to the public schools if that $40 million went to them?
It would hurt.
No, if it went to schools. What would happen to the public schools if $40 million went to them?
Well, it would be going – how it would work is that –
you're missing the point of my question. If you didn't increase the funding for vouchers to $40 million and you took the $40 million and you gave it to the public schools, how would they benefit? Would it be a drop in the bucket, or would it be something that would actually help? Does anybody know? What's $40 million to all the state, to all the public schools in the state?
Right. I mean, the education budget in North Carolina is many billions of dollars.
Right.
It's about half of the overall state budget. So you can say $40 million is somewhat a drop in the bucket. But then again, I mean, CMS's entire additional request this year is $39.9 million. So
it wouldn't be that much. If you took the you're missing the point of my question. Everybody has these blank stares on their face. If you took the $40 million that the legislature is thinking about giving to school vouchers and gave it to the public schools instead, it wouldn't really help that much. That's my point.
I mean,
it's a drop in the bucket.
Sure.
Okay.
But
help the kids?
I'll say it again, Rima.
I mean, it would, as Lisa said, it would give $4,200 to each kid, which is not necessarily enough to cover all of the tuition for a lot of these schools. But it would take, from what I understand, some money from the public school system, but some would argue that it wouldn't necessarily affect them that much, while others would say that, sort of cumulatively, it could hurt.
Okay. And critics have said with these vouchers that the problem with the state's voucher program is that there are very few ties to the money. The state does very little to ensure that private schools getting the voucher money have good teachers or a sound curriculum. But isn't that a given? I mean, if people are paying their own money to go to a private school, aren't they performing?
Well,
aren't they tested the same way the public schools are? Don't they have end of year testing?
I don't think the private schools have to do the same end of year testing as the traditional public schools. But one of the arguments, one of the accountability arguments for both private schools and charter schools is that they have to operate as a business. That parents don't have to send their kids there. So if they weren't performing, the parents would just up and leave and they would shut down.
Yeah, the marketplace would cut them off. All right, Susan emails, I heard you speaking somewhat disparagingly about public taxpayer dollars going to nonprofit management companies when setting up charter schools, but we routinely hire for-profit companies with taxpayer dollars to build roads, public buildings, and other services that serve the public. Our schools are probably our greatest resource for building better educated Americans. If it takes spending tax dollars to make sure it's done by professional people and not bureaucrats, how can that be a bad thing? Well, I'm not going to advocate one way or the other, but I will say that there are people who are questioning the state's decision to put a toll road in on I-77 run by a private company for 50 years when the state could do it themselves and reap the profits. We also have a national system of prisons run for for-profit companies, and that seems to have a detrimental side effect that nobody likes to talk about. Could there be a detrimental side effect to a lot of for-profit companies running schools, public schools, charter schools?
I mean, there certainly could be. I mean, that's you know, charter schools are still, or the for-profit management companies running charter schools are still so new in North Carolina that kind of the effects are, have really yet to be seen, but that's certainly one of the fears that's out there.
Peter in Wesley Chapel, let's not forget that actual learning, grappling with concepts and understanding, is more important than grades per se. My daughter is currently in Union County 8th grade, and it seems the priority today is teaching to the test, which increases the tedium of the classroom and yields an overall lower quality education. That's still a topic of conversation around the state, teaching to the test.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And there's, you know, it's reached the state legislature, the State Board of Education, as far as, you know, the amount of testing that kids go through in schools. So there's a group right now, a task force that's going through this and figuring out, you know, what do we do? I mean, how do we make sure that schools are accountable, but don't necessarily swamp kids with tests.
And I think, Rima, you reported recently on considering the state considering replacing end-of-year tests with four smaller tests throughout the year. If people are upset about end-of-year testing, now they'd have to be upset about four tests throughout the year. What's the thinking behind this?
Right. That's a proposal right now that they're floating around, and you're right. It would, for the third through eighth graders, it would get rid of the end of grade exams that they have right now, and it would replace them with four tests that they would take throughout the year. The idea, I think, would be that they'd be smaller tests, not so high stakes, and they two of them would be, I think, considered more standardized tests and would be used to compare to see how students are doing. But the idea is that they would take these smaller tests so that teachers have a better understanding of how they're doing throughout the school year so they can adjust their teaching accordingly, right? So right now some students take the test at the end of the grade, at the end of the year, summer hits and they're off and they're on to the next grade. So they want to be able to attack that problem while it's happening. And it's kind of, I mean, it seems like a pretty revolutionary idea, but it would require a lot of tweaking. So they would, for starters, it would require the U.S. Department of Education to sign off on it, which currently requires end of grade tests. And I think more interestingly is that right now, and maybe we'll get into this later, but right now the state is reviewing the Common Core standards, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to come up with revisions to it. These are the standards that students learn in school, math and English standards. And lots of people are not happy with them, so they're reviewing them right now and may drastically change them. We don't know. And so some folks are saying it doesn't make sense to try to change the test before we've even changed the standards. That could create problems later on.
Help me understand this. It's been a long time since I've been in a grade school or a high school classroom, so help me understand this, because I do vaguely remember that we had end-of-year exams when I went to high school and grade school in the Pleistocene era. But we also had tests, pop quizzes and unit tests and midterm tests and quarterly tests. That doesn't seem to be something new or revolutionary. We had those things, and we knew where we stood throughout the school year. And yes, you could flunk the final, but you knew going into the final pretty much that you were going to flunk it or not do well because he hadn't been doing well all along. Why are we not still doing that?
Well, we are still doing that.
So what are these four new tests supposed to prove that
these would be standardized tests that every student in the state takes to be able to compare how they're doing among each other and how they're doing across the nation. And I think in theory, ideally, the school districts would be able to reduce the local assessments, the local tests that they give. I mean, they just really want to find things, is what they've said. But you're right. I mean, some local school districts may still want to do their own tests. You know, teachers will still have their own things going on in the classroom. So it'll be interesting, I think, to see how these tests sort of play into that and what teachers and those sort of in the schools think about it.
And now standardized tests are going to be moving into kindergarten. I read next year a standardized test will gauge the intellectual and physical development of kindergartners who are entering school for the first time. How controversial or helpful might this be?
I don't see this one isn't quite as controversial as some of the other standardized tests, because this one isn't what they would consider high stakes. Basically, what they're going to do is kids coming into kindergarten at the beginning of the year, what they want to create some sort of child profile. They want to look at their academic skills, their physical development, social development. Just the theory is that the teachers are going to be able to better tailor their teaching to the individual students in their class.
They'll know what they're dealing with.
Exactly.
The physical and intellectual development of children, because a lot of kids who come to kindergarten have not been read to as children, and they don't know their colors, and so they're behind some other students. So this will help with that, I take it.
That's the goal.
Okay.
And that's the argument for putting a lot of these sort of mid-year tests, is that, with a high-stakes test at the end of the year, mm-hmm. The knowledge you get from that is not going to help the teacher who's teaching that course.
Right.
It's passed. So
you can see where you are along the way with these four tests.
Exactly.
Okay. Alina on Facebook writes, the need for vouchers stems directly from the failure of public schools in North Carolina to support students and teachers. I am a teacher who had to resign because of the mismanagement of the system at CMS. CMS is in absolute shambles and needs to be completely overhauled. Have we heard that before?
Oh, I mean, sure. I mean, you'll hear some people say that there's definitely an undercurrent of that sentiment.
Carol on Facebook writes, choice is a code word for getting away from black and brown students. Mike, your questions are spot on. With more charter schools that require a lottery where transportation is not provided, you are by design eliminating a significant portion of children from low-income families and families not savvy enough to enter the lottery.
Yeah, can I pipe in?
Sure.
That is definitely an argument that we hear. And charter schools struggle more with providing the funds or getting a hold of the funds to provide transportation or free and reduced lunches or any of these other things that traditional public schools are required to do.
And if you're a charter school being run by a for-profit company, you would be disinclined to do that because it would cut into your profits, correct?
I don't know, as far as for-profit companies looking at how many of them offer lunch and transportation.
If you don't have to, why would you?
Well, many of them do. I mean, it's not that, many of them do, and some of them try to do, have been trying, a couple of schools across the state have been doing these lottery systems, and this speaks to the point of including more students, these lottery systems that are just targeted to certain populations of students. And we are seeing more charter schools trying. I mean, I don't think they haven't been successful, but we've been seeing more charter schools and traditional public schools trying to begin conversations to see how they can share resources between school buses or professional development, since, as we stated before, that is, I think, the ideal mission of charter schools, to share what they are learning into the traditional public schools, but also to have this, back and forth stream of knowledge, I suppose.
That's Reem McCrace, who's an education reporter for WUNC in Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill. Andrew Dunn is with us, education reporter for the Charlotte Observer. And Lisa Wharf, our education reporter here with WFAE News. When we come back, we'll talk about teacher pay and recruitment. We'll get into the grading of the schools A through F, Common Core, and more, and take some more of your comments and questions as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Central Piedmont Community College's STEM Summer Experience, offering STEM camps throughout the summer for rising 3rd through 12th graders beginning June 15th. Details at stemsummerexperience.com. And North Carolina Humanities Council's touring exhibit, Hometown Teams, How Sports Shape America, Alter Community Development, Create Discussion, and Change Throughout History. 6 site locations at nchumanities.org. Saudi Arabia's new king pulls out of a Washington summit. Secretary Kerry meets with Russian President Putin about the Syria conflict, America's shifting relationships, and its role in the world. The topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you have something to say about education and things we've been talking about as we've been going through the hour, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter and join the conversation right here. And we're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
This is
clearly a very strong night for the Conservative Party.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
The word city manager Ron Carley used to describe his balanced budget is complicated.
Not only did we look behind every seat cushion, we turned all the furniture.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about education and the topics swirling around education here and around the state, even as schools get ready to go on a summer hiatus. Lisa Wharf, Andrew Dunn, and Rima Crace are with us, all education reporters from WFAE News, the Charlotte Observer, and WUNC in Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill. Teacher pay has long been a bone of contention here and around the state, and some of the things lawmakers did to address low teacher pay last year got teachers pretty upset. It increased starting teachers' salaries, but they seem to shortchange experienced teachers. Are there any plans to readdress that or take another look at that?
No, and in fact, at the state level, the plan is to actually continue in that direction. You know, one thing that Governor McCrory has proposed in his budget proposal is to bump beginning teacher pay once again from 33, where it is now, up to 35,000. Now, CMS, there's been a lot of talk in the school board to kind of address that discrepancy. So one thing that Superintendent Ann Clark is asking for from the county is funding to give a 2% raise to everybody who isn't covered by that beginning teacher bump.
Why this focus on beginning teachers as opposed to experienced teachers?
Well, a lot of it has to do with recruiting. Superintendent Clark has said that the thing that keeps her up at night is making sure there's enough teachers in the classroom. So there's a huge fight to get teachers in the door to begin with.
But if you're a young teacher, and yes, you want a decent starting salary because you do have expenses, college education expenses you need to pay off, and you're just starting out, and it would be nice to make more money, so why not take the job in Charlotte? But if you take the job in Charlotte knowing that you're topped out, well, in year five or whatever it is, why would you come here in the first place?
Well, and I think that's part of the argument for what they're trying to do with teacher pay, which they have not been able to do it. And how you come up with that money is a lot of questions. But that instead of waiting for 35 years in the system to top out at your pay, the idea is that you have this base salary and that you are paid by merit. And that's where this immensely controversial, arguments of the last few years about test scores determining teacher pay and being paid accordingly to how you perform in the classroom or how your students perform in the classroom.
Does anybody know what the more accurate gauge of teacher performance is, whether it is the test scores that are actually dependent upon whether students study and whether their parents make them study versus you having a higher or advanced degree or having a lot of experience in the classroom? Does anybody know what the factor that makes a good teacher an effective teacher really is?
The big thing that they look at is the growth in test scores. So not the final end of the test scores.
But has anybody studied anything to see whether that actually is an accurate measure?
Well, and that's the argument, that is not an accurate measure, that is one way to measure it, but it's hard to factor in everything.
Is it also a convenient way to measure it?
It's one way of measuring it. Yes,
I mean it certainly is convenient because it's something that you can compare apples to apples across the whole state. You know, if it's a standardized test, it's a standardized measure.
So,
but it doesn't take into account sort of the challenges that a lot of the schools face, or the, if you're serving high populations of low income students who are struggling to get to school or to even have their books, ready with them, they're facing challenges that other schools aren't necessarily.
You mentioned that Ann Clark is suggesting that the county give more experienced teachers a 2% pay raise. And Andrew, you reported recently that there's a bill put forward by Mecklenburg County Democrat Joyce Waddell. She's in her first term in the state Senate to raise teacher pay for experienced teachers from anywhere from 2 to 13%. What is the likelihood that a Democrat can get a bill like that through a Republican legislator?
I think it would be very, very challenging, to say the least.
And there are some, Rima, there are some state leaders who want to plan for a day when we treat teaching like a profession. I think those are your words, or I think I read that in the story you wrote. I could be wrong. Who is behind that, and what does it mean? I thought it was a profession.
Well, I mean, as we're saying, lots of teachers leave their professions. Hard to keep them in there, and they feel like they're not being respected. We have one of the lowest, per pupil allotment. We have one of the lowest salaries for teachers across the country. They're not feeling respected. So we are seeing ideas, not necessarily any concrete proposals, to try to create a profession in which teachers can advance. And as Lisa mentioned, not spend years in the classroom and until they make a salary that they're happy with, but that they can actually go into leadership positions that don't necessarily mean going behind a principal's desk. So there are some ideas to create more differentiated pay based on teachers' experience, teachers' role in leadership, and also in their involvement in hard-to-staff schools or teaching positions like science and math or technology, sort of the more hard-to-fill subjects.
And you reported, Lisa, that lawmakers are considering a bill to create scholarships for college students and teachers who agree to fill high-need positions in hard-to-staff schools. Is that really new?
Well, they've had a teacher's fellow program mm-hmm. that was basically dissolved recently that was trying to recruit teachers in a similar way. So this is a sort of different way to do it.
It is very similar to the North Carolina Teaching Fellows program, which a lot of people were upset when that went away. What that essentially did was help pay for school to get more teachers in the classroom. I spoke with one of the legislators that's backing the bill that would create this new fund, and what he had to say is that it takes a little bit more targeted approach based on those hard-to-fill subjects or those hard-to-fill schools.
Let's talk, before we run out of time on the program today, let's talk about the A through F grading system that the schools went through for the first time, I believe, this year. It was supposed to get harder in the coming year. They were going to change the grading scale, but now they are rethinking that. Being the legislature, is that because a quarter of the schools around the state received a D? They don't want to make it harder now because they'll get an F next time? Is that why?
I've talked with Craig Horn on this state legislature, House representative, big in the education field, and he said basically it will be very hard for comparisons. So the idea is that you keep it the same grading scale for the next 3 years. You kind of ease schools into this, and then you jump. And it will be tougher after.
So he
that.
Certainly has a point there. You can't. That would be an apples to oranges comparison.
Yeah, that's
from the first
that's
year
part
to the
of
second.
It. That's part of it. But yes, there is the idea that you ease schools.
So how did they grade these schools? What was the process?
So they looked at test scores, how well students did on the standardized tests that we were talking about earlier at the end of the year, and they look at how much growth they've made over time. But much more weight is given to how well they do on the test. 80% of the grade is calculated by that, and 20% is calculated by growth. And they are calculated on a 15-point scale. So if your cumulative score falls between 85 and 100, you get an A. And that's the change that we're talking about right now. We're going to keep it at that 15-point scale mm-hmm. as opposed to going to 10-point scale. But we also saw legislation that would keep the
Well, the formula is also really controversial. The 80%.
That's what I was talking about. I
thought that's where you were going.
Yeah. I totally blanked for a second. That would change the formula. So right now it's 80-20, so they would change it to 50-50, so that 50% is based on growth and 50% is based on how well students do. And that passed in the House. And it's supposed to go to the Senate. Lots of Senate lawmakers do not like that idea. They want to keep it how it is to see how the grades look over time. So my hunch is that it might die in the Senate. I know that they just referred it to the committee where bills usually die. But we'll see. There are still some efforts in the Senate to create that kind of formula so that growth is considered just as equally as test scores. So some of the schools with high populations of low-income students can be graded fairly, as some would say.
And some people in education have criticized these A through F scores as being a snapshot of a moment in time, and it doesn't take into consideration everything. Charlotte Superintendent Ann Clark suggested that parents should judge schools by the quality of the principal, the caliber of the teachers, the climate of the school, etc. But are parents in a position to do that? I wouldn't know how to grade the quality of a principal or even of a teacher necessarily. I'm not in the classroom. I don't know what goes on in there.
They do have school report cards that, I mean, that's a very different sort of qualitative feel for it. But they do have school report cards that go down from, you know, the number of fights at the school to there's a whole range of things. And that's been around for many years.
Yeah, but that's one of the appeals of the A through F grading scale. I mean, that's one of the reasons, you know, the people cite for creating the A through F system is that it is very difficult for a parent to really assess how their school is doing. And this is one measure that they can take a look at.
Mm. And it's kind of interesting. Up Forsyth County Schools, they basically said, we don't like the A through F school grades, so we're going to come up with our own and we're going to weight it differently.
And CMS is doing something along those lines as well. They're coming up with their own accountability framework that's going to have all these different metrics to grade a school. And it should be interesting to see when that comes out.
Rima, I think you mentioned Common Core. The future of Common Core seems to be in question here. It was a Republican plan, I think, promoted by several Republican governors and passed in many Republican-controlled states to bring national standards to the classrooms across the country. But here, it's starting to look a little cloudy. We were one of the first states to adopt the idea of Common Core standards. What's going on? Why the shift in position now?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of people just not happy with Common Core and since it was adopted a few years ago. And last year, the legislature said, okay, you know what, we're just going to create a review commission. They're going to take a look at these standards, and we are going to try to tweak them. I remember the title of the bill was to replace them, but they may tweak them. They may drastically change them. We don't know. The commission began meeting last year. They've had a handful of committee meetings, and to be frank, they haven't done incredibly much yet. Part of the reason is because they were waiting for funding to come in for a while, and it finally came in. But they've been sort of, I think, moving at a slow pace, and they're required to come up with the changes by December. So right now they're just trying to come up with, they're trying to hear from different perspectives across the state. They're trying to get surveys together to see how people feel about these standards. But some of the arguments we heard about them is that they're just not appropriate for some students, developmentally appropriate. So,
does that mean it's too hard?
And not necessarily that it's too hard. I mean, I don't think they would argue that they don't want rigorous standards. They do, but they are just saying what they're being taught at certain grade levels just isn't what maybe a kindergartner or first grader needs to know at that point in time, and that they don't necessarily progress in a way that would reflect the way a student learns. But of course, that's one argument. You'll hear folks who support the standards and who say the complete opposite.
Right.
Lisa? And it'll be interesting to see how much these standards would change according to that committee. I mean, is it going to be a tweak as has happened in some states, or, you know, is it going to be a wholesale rewrite? So
okay,
it could end up.
Yeah, go for it.
I was just going to say, yeah, it could end up looking very similar to the standards we already have.
Okay. Let's bring it close to home for just a second. Ann Clark agreed to step in for a few years as a CMS superintendent of school after they fired Heath Morrison. Has the school board launched a search? They have launched the search for her successor, correct? Do we know?
They've talked about launching
a
search.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, yeah. They are in the extremely early stages of it. They had a
She's
meeting.
Agreed to stay till when? 2016?
July 2016.
Okay.
They want to have a new person named by really early 2016. They've had, kind of organizational meetings where they talked really high level about their values and a new superintendent and so on. I think they're going to spend a lot more time over the summer really working.
Well, what are they looking for? Because with Heath Morrison, they brought in a superstar. Now, the question is, did they vet him? And are the accusations true? We'll never know because they're never going to let that information out. But what are they looking for?
Well, And that's a tough question. I think there's a lot of articles and books in the academic world that everybody wants Superman or Superwoman to come in and fix everything, and that's really hard to find. I think at this point, it's pretty clear that the CMS school board wants a national search, and beyond that, it's really not clear.
Because Ann Clark, I believe, applied for the job when they gave it to Heath Morrison, and the national search led them back to home in a very short amount of time. The shelf life on school superintendents is incredible. It's shorter than that of milk. I mean, it's unbelievable. Has the heat died down in terms of the way the board handled the dismissal of Heath Morrison? Are there still lingering questions out there? Has the Observer been pressing to get the answer? Have we?
I mean, the heat to some extent has died down. I mean, it's been how many months now? It's been 7 months. But I mean, there's still a lot of questions out there in the community, and I would not be surprised if, as they conduct the search for a new superintendent, if a lot of these questions come up again. And the at-large elections are this fall for the three at-large school board seats, so I wouldn't be surprised if it comes up then either.
And we've done quite a few public records requests and I've gone through those and haven't seen too much.
And probably won't. We don't really have a lot of time, but I know that the administrators at about a dozen schools in CMS are working on something called the Beacon Initiative. We have about 30 seconds. What is the Beacon Initiative, Andrew?
Essentially, it's the latest crack at solving the problems at chronically underperforming schools in CMS. 14 schools are taking part. Their administrators are going to spend a couple weeks up at the University of Virginia this summer coming up with plans to turn the schools around.
Okay. We'll be following that, I suppose, in the pages of The Observer. Andrew Dunn, the education reporter there, Rima Crace, education reporter for WUNC, and Lisa Worf, our education reporter here at WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7